Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Wall Street's a mess. Washington is the same. Europe is in trouble. Remind me, somebody, please, what's changed? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace podcast for Wednesday, November 7th. Good, as always, to have you with us. The Wall Street watchword the past, year, maybe, has been certainty. They just want certainty so they can make whatever plans they're going to make. Turns out we could have cut to the chase a while ago. President Obama's reelection and no change in the split Congress is about as certain as you're going to get. Yet Wall Street had itself a little freak out today. Part of that was grim tidings from Europe, about which more later. But we sent Marketplace's Mark Garrison out this morning to find out why traders were so uneasy the morning after.
Can you take me a picture?
Even in the driving sleet of a fierce nor'easter, tourists mugged for photos in front of the giant charging bull statue near Wall Street. But a few blocks away at the New York Stock Exchange or at any number of American trading floors, the bulls were in full retreat. The sentiment about President Obama's reelection is as gloomy as the bitter weather outside.
I described to somebody it felt like my puppy got run over.
Gene Santaccioli, a bond trader, backed Romney.
Didn't turn out the way we thought, and I feel that the United States system and government is on a very dangerous cliff right now.
The president's reelection wasn't responsible for all the turmoil today, but Wall Street was definitely rooting for Romney. His donations from finance, insurance, and real estate nearly tripled President Obama's. Wall Street liked Romney's emphasis on slashing taxes. Fiscal cliff anxiety also spooked traders. The supersized tax hikes and spending cuts would punish the still fragile economy.
The worry, of course, is that Obama digs in because he won, and the Republicans dig in because they don't want any tax hikes, and that we're just back to square one.
That's Miller Tabak strategist Peter Bookvar. Square one is the same government we've had for a while, Democratic White House and Senate, with Republicans running the House. Former presidential adviser David Gergen says the president's top priority is breaking through that gridlock to solve the fiscal cliff.
Working that out has got to be the number one, number two, and number three.
House Speaker John Boehner signaled today he could compromise. If they can come together, that frustrated, waterlogged bull may take charge again. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
While there is much we don't know about the next 4 years, we do know Obamacare is here to stay. That means millions of potential new customers for insurance companies. So, as the presidential campaign ends, another campaign is in the offing, courtesy of the insurance industry. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, PA, Dan Gorenstein reports.
Now that the Affordable Care Act is full speed ahead, millions of Americans will begin buying health insurance the way they buy everything else. James Rep is with AvMed Health Plans in Miami.
You'll now have the ability to pick a specific product that is really geared, designed, and built around the specific needs that you have.
Come January 14th, as many as 30 million new customers will be up for grabs. And insurance companies who can close the deal stand to make billions. So, cue the makeover and marketing blitz. Rep says the industry needs to change its image as penny-pinching and cold-hearted into something more trustworthy.
There's definitely an opportunity to play more of an advocate role or a trusted advisor role.
Kind of like those old E.F. Hutton commercials.
When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen.
You know, a calm hand in a crazy healthcare world. One of the biggest marketing efforts will be aimed at African Americans and Latinos who are among the least insured. But that's not going to be easy.
There's an acknowledgement by insurance companies and healthcare providers alike that they don't know what to do. They don't know how to reach these people.
David Morris heads up New American Dimensions, a multicultural market research company in Los Angeles. Morris says people of color are likely to appear in more ads, and more ads, lots more ads, will start showing up early next year. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, as I said, not so good. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. for the fortune tellers of this election, the pollsters trying to figure out who is going to win before there was any voting done. Today probably ought to be a day off, but it's not.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport is the editor-in-chief at Gallup. He's back once again. Frank, it's good to talk to you.
Good to be with you.
So here we are, the payoff day, huh? I guess yesterday was the payoff day, right?
Well, yesterday was the election. We know who won now. I can tell you definitively Barack Obama won re-election. How's that?
Well, that's good, but that's not what you guys thought was going to happen.
Well, actually, our final poll, which we conducted through Sunday, we said the popular vote was too close to call, within 1 point, Romney and Obama. Mm-hmm. And actually, the final estimates we had and other pollsters had, they were actually fairly close.
Yeah, with Romney ahead, though, right?
By 1 point. 49% for Romney, 48% for Obama was what our final model showed. That is correct.
The headlines today, Frank, are in essence, Nate Silver was right, Gallup was wrong. What do you say?
I don't agree with that at all.
Shocking.
Nate Silver aggregated many, many, many different state polls, which is what he mainly focused on. Other people like him did the same thing. And sure enough, they accurately said that President Barack Obama would be reelected. So that's certainly true.
Now, on that topic of aggregators, my guess would be you don't love people taking your data and sort of regurgitating it.
Well, you know, it's an issue today. There's been a lot of traffic back and forth among pollsters. These aggregators don't exist without people who are out there actually doing polls. So the question would be from an industry perspective, and I think it's an important one, if we at Gallup and others say, well, we're going to aggregate. You know, we won't poll anymore, but we're going to develop models and put other people's polls in the models, and that drives sufficient traffic and interest, then we may stop polling, and the next firm may stop polling, and the next firm may stop polling, and after a while, there are no polls for anybody to aggregate.
There was a lot of talk yesterday on the networks about the demographics of this, about young people voting. And I heard somebody on some news channel someplace say, you know, once people vote the same way two times, they're pretty much committed. And the Republican Party now has lost two big elections with young people and immigrants and people who vote that way. And so now the Republicans have lost a generation. Do you buy that?
Well, clearly, in terms of non-whites, immigrants and other people who identify themselves as non-whites, the Republicans have lost that group. Young people, interesting question. That's generation versus cohort. Will these young people, as they age into middle age and get older, will they change their patterns? Or, as you kind of implied, Kai, are they imprinted now? You know, they voted for Obama a couple of times, and now they say, aha, I'm going to vote Democratic the rest of my life. I'm not sure we have an answer to that question, but that's a fascinating point.
What was the most surprising thing for you out of yesterday?
Well, the surprise probably was that the turnout continued to be strong among non-whites, not necessarily the surprise, but I think the big issue was that a man who won on the number one issue that Americans are concerned about, and that's the economy, Mitt Romney, who was seen as doing better than Obama, at least in our polling on that measure, still was not able to parlay that into winning the election.
Frank Newport, he's the editor-in-chief at Gallup. Frank, thanks a bunch.
My pleasure.
Just because you can never have too much information about this kind of stuff, we did some exit polling of our own today. Listeners across the country and how they're feeling. One Democrat, a Republican, and an independent from a range of ages, and even a first-time voter. Here you go.
My name is Benedict Kanopic. I'm from Jackson Heights, Queens. I'm 71, and I'm retired. I voted for Obama. Some of my premiums will be a little higher. But I feel like I'm more secure with his policies than I would have been with Mitt Romney.
Well, I'm Mary Smith. I am 41 years old. I live in a small town, Belle Plaine, Kansas. And right now I'm just nothing but a full-time student, mom, and wife. Yesterday I did vote for Mitt Romney. As a student who will be looking for a job here in the very near future, I am concerned that there is jobs available, especially in the healthcare field, which is what I'm going into, and I don't know how Obamacare is going to impact that.
My name is Alexander Finney. I am 18. I live in Winthrop, Maine. I am a full-time student at University of Maine Augusta and a part-time worker in a local restaurant. I voted for Libertarian Gary Johnson because I don't agree with how Obama's handling the economic issues, and I don't think Romney would be able to handle foreign affairs.
Coming up, Governor Romney is going to be fine even though he didn't get the job that he wanted. Others in his age bracket, maybe not.
While older workers are less likely to lose their jobs than younger people, when they do become unemployed, it takes them just a really long time to find work.
But first, let's do the numbers. Goodbye, election. Why, hello, fiscal cliff. The Dow Industrial slid 312 points today. Count them, 312 points, 2.3%. Closed at 12,932. The NASDAQ gave back 2.5%, 74 points, 29.37 at the bell. The S&P 500 reversed 2.3%. That is 33 points, closed at 13.94. We'll begin with the carnage in banking. Morgan Stanley forfeited 8.5% today. Bank of America withdrew more than 7%. J.P. Morgan Chase sheared off more than 5.5%. Stocks of for-profit education companies also got pummeled on fears of more government scrutiny of student debt. ITT Education unloaded more than 6.5%. Apollo Group, which owns University of Phoenix, lost more than 6% today. Apple, which is now, by the by, officially in its own little well-designed bear market, knocked off another 3.8%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.64%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Thursday. The U.S. Commerce Department releases import-export figures for the month of September. The Labor Department reports on extended mass layoffs for the third quarter. That's when 50 or more employees from a single company lose their jobs for at least 31 days. And on November 8, 1889, Montana became the 41st state in the Union. That's 3 electoral votes. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. All right, so do this for me. Would you forget all the money there was in this election for a second? Or actually, just think about what it represents in a different way. It's capital, right? To be acquired and spent as one sees fit. Today, there's a different kind of capital in the news, political capital. Marketplace's David Gura has more on how you get it and how you spend it.
This is what President George W. Bush told reporters 2 days after he won a second term.
I earned capital in the campaign, political capital, and now I intend to spend it.
Political capital can be very valuable. It gives a politician this sense that the public's got his back, that he can flex a little more muscle when he's negotiating with Congress. But as President Bush learned, political capital isn't something a two-term president gets automatically. Brian Brox is a poli-sci professor at Tulane.
It's not a given just by winning. It's how you win.
A politician can get political capital if he wins by a lot. Think Ronald Reagan in 1984, Bill Clinton in 96. President Bush's margin of victory wasn't huge, and let's just say he may have misunderestimated how little political capital he had. His push to revamp Social Security went nowhere. Alan Abramowitz teaches political science at Emory.
Political capital is in the eye of the beholder.
And that makes it a really risky asset. A politician can spend more than he actually has. Sarah Binder is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and she says a president gets an extra boost of political capital if his party controls both the House and the Senate. So where does this leave President Obama?
Wow, I don't really think the bank account of the president's political capital is really restocked in any measurable way.
Binder says it's hard to say what President Obama would do with the political capital he does have.
There was no big, bold presidential agenda laid out in this campaign.
And Republicans held on to their majority in the House. They've got some political capital of their own. So who has more? We'll find out in the coming days as the debate heats up over what to do about the fiscal cliff. automatic spending cuts and tax increases scheduled to kick in at the end of the year. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
The news from Europe today was dire, predictably dire, one might say. More forecasts about the continent's none-too-bright economic prospects. The European Commission cut its growth estimate for the European Union for this year and next. And to boot, there were some worrying numbers out of Germany as well. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The European Commission's forecast in the spring was far from sunny. Today it turned decidedly autumnal. Analyst David Owen.
At the moment, all the forward-looking indicators point down.
The Commission says the EU economy will shrink by a third of 1% this year, and next year it will barely haul itself out of recession. Bob McKee of Independent Strategy says it's the debt crisis taking its toll.
The driving down of the debt levels in the government sector is reducing the ability of the economy to grow and making things worse. So we're in a bit of a spiral there.
And most worryingly, Europe's locomotive is running out of steam. Germany's manufacturing output saw its sharpest fall in 6 months. The great export machine is sputtering, partly due to the slowdown in China. But David Owen of Jefferies International Bank says it's mainly because of those problems closer to home.
The weakness in the Eurozone economy is beginning to pull Germany back down again. And it's quite clear that Germany as well could be in danger of sliding back into recession.
And that's focusing European minds on the world's biggest locomotive on the other side of the pond. If the US falls off its fiscal cliff, it'll drag down Europe's fragile economy even further, making today's grim forecasts look rather rosy. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We've been talking to small business owners the past couple of days, undecided small business owners to be precise, about who they liked in this election and why. Well, Lala Njenga runs a marketing firm in Raleigh, North Carolina. As of last Friday, she was leaning Obama, but you could tell she really wanted to vote Romney. So we called her back to see what happened. Hey, Lala, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm all right. So listen, we had you on Friday. You were a little on the fence, leaning one way. How'd it go?
Well, I guess it went okay. We have a president, so, you know.
Yes. All right. What I meant was, how did it go for you? Who'd you wind up going for?
I have decided that I am just not going to say. I'm not going to reveal.
Oh, are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
All right,
would be surprised what people have, some of the nasty things people have shared.
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised. It happens all the time. Let me ask you this, though. Do you feel better now about the state of the American economy in the next 4 years than you did Monday at this time?
I feel better about it now.
She says haltingly.
Yes.
Because?
Very trepidatiously.
Really?
I think Barack Obama has learned a few lessons. You know, it wasn't like he won by a landslide, meaning he had to work really hard this election. And I think that should serve as a wake-up call for him, that there's more work that he needs to do, and that it's not as easy as giving people, you know, the promise of hope as a strategy.
What can the president tell you that's going to make you optimistic about your prospects as a small businesswoman?
I'd really like him to look at the math a little differently. One of the things that has consistently bothered me is him putting the D mark for middle class at $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
That $250,000 does not make us feel like we're part of the new rich. And I'd like to see him move that number to $500,000.
So, but if you make $500,000 a year in this country, you're way, way high in that top 1%. It kind of, you know, asking for some kind of special treatment there sort of doesn't make any sense, does it?
Well, I don't know that it's special treatment, and I'm looking at it specifically from the perspective of a small business owner. So I'm just asking the president to reevaluate where the line is. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Olala Njenga is the CEO and senior marketing strategist at a company called Yellowwood Group in Raleigh, North Carolina. We had her on Friday talking about politics and the election and small business. Olala, thanks a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
New York and New Jersey are, if you can believe it, dealing with another big storm, a nor'easter today. Yet another hassle for people and businesses still trying to get power, let alone get things and life back to normal. Airlines are going to take another big hit. Best guesses are Sandy cost them $300 million or so. Marketplace's Queen of Kim explains how they might be able to cover their losses.
By some estimates, the airlines will be grounding about 1,000 flights while waiting for the nor'easter. But good luck getting an insurer to cover those losses.
No one in their right mind would take such a risk.
Mike Boyd is an aviation consultant.
When you fly an airplane, you are at the mercy of Mother Nature, and that's not a really good thing to try to insure against.
So if there's no insurance, then what? Annette Fuentes, who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, has a theory. Before Sandy, she'd been shopping for airline tickets to New York. And then Sandy hit, her mom's house was destroyed, and she started looking for tickets again. But this time,
it seemed like suddenly they were charging a whole lot more.
She believes airlines are making up for their losses by price gouging. Richard Abulafia is an aviation analyst at Teal Group.
There are no monocle-wearing, top-hatted billionaires in the back room saying, an opportunity to charge people more. No, that doesn't happen.
These days, algorithms set prices based in part on supply and demand. Abulafia says that the truth about how airlines minimize loss is way more boring.
The most important thing airlines can do is to move assets and people away from the storm. Not only do you not want aircraft damaged by the storm,
but you want to make sure that the plane and the crew aren't stuck in the storm and that they can service other routes where the weather's fine. And then that's about it.
Guess what? You're still making payments on the jets and you can't tell people, go home, we're not paying your salary, there's a storm.
Abulafia says there's no silver bullet that can protect airlines from Mother Nature. I'm Queen of Kim for Marketplace.
After his concession speech last night, Governor Romney joined a group that grew in size over the Great Recession, older unemployed men. Granted, Governor Romney has been unemployed for a number of years now, and it's not like he needs a job, but work with me here. If he wasn't super rich and if he didn't have investments galore, then what would he do? From the Wealth and Poverty Desk, Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji set out to discover what one might find at the corner of 65 and unemployed.
Rich Morin says 65 is the new 45.
They just aren't as wore out as my father was when he was 65.
Morin is a senior editor at the Pew Research Center. They've surveyed older workers, and a majority said they worked because they wanted to, not because they had to. So, if you find yourself without a job at 65...
So you're going to be mentally active, physically able, and, you know, there's only so much golf you can play. That gets old. The question is, are there jobs for them to get?
While older workers are less likely to lose their jobs than younger people, when they do become unemployed, it takes them just a really long time to find work.
Richard Johnson directs the program on retirement policy at the Urban Institute. Johnson says more than half of unemployed workers, 65 and older, haven't had a job for at least 6 months. So let's say you've decided to stop looking for work and you're considering retirement.
Do you have guaranteed income every month to help you meet your fixed expenses?
Kathy Weatherford is the president of the Insured Retirement Institute. She says Americans are over-reliant on Social Security and haven't saved enough for retirement.
If you and your spouse are now 65, there's a 50% chance that one of you will live to be age 92 and a 25% chance that one of you will live to be 97.
Weatherford says hold off on touching that Social Security because you could have 30 more years of life and expenses to look forward to. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
Today does bring with it a whiff of nostalgia, you know, for the electioneering words and phrases we've all come to know and love. So here, for perhaps the last time, are some of our economic favorites.
999.
Obamacare.
You didn't build that.
It's almost like an etch-a-sketch.
47% of Americans pay no income tax.
Double down on trickle down.
They're a currency manipulator.
I drive a Mustang and a Chevy pickup truck. Ann drives a couple of Cadillacs, actually.
Romnesia.
Binders full of women.
All right, so here's the test. How many of the hard ones, not Romney or Obama or Clinton, for that matter, can you identify? There were three, if you were listening real close. Tell us your answers and what phrases, economic or otherwise, you're going to miss. We're on Twitter at MarketplaceAPM. You can get me at Kai Rizdahl.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
A final note this day after Election Day about the influence of money on politics, whether buckets full of money help decide this year's elections. I mean, you don't spend $100 million like Karl Rove and his Republican super PAC American Crossroads did without getting something for it, do you? Granted, he did have a pretty good time on Fox News last night. What about Las Vegas magnate Sheldon Adelson and his $53 million spread over six different and losing GOP candidates this year? You ask around on the other side of the aisle, though, it's a different story. The Democratic super PAC Priorities USA Action might say it very much got its money's worth for the $67 million it spent on President Obama. But here's the thing. There have been all kinds of talk this cycle about Citizens United and outside money and who can spend how much. But here's the point. We really ought to figure out how we feel about money and politics in this country, because we are doing this whole thing all over again in just 1,462 days. And we're at the end of one of them. That's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow off 312 points. That is 2.3%. The NASDAQ gave back 2.5%, which out to be 74 points. The S&P 500 reversed 2.3%, 33 points. Robbie Carman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bradford Craig, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brendan Willard. Engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you back here tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.